Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 14 of the Kitchen Stitches podcast. If this is your first time joining me, welcome, and I'm so glad you're here. And for those of you who are returning, thanks so much for coming back. If you are so inclined, we do have a Ravelry group, and we're at almost 60 members. It is a fairly quiet group, but I do post some yummy recipes, and some of the other members have also posted some yummy recipes. And I would love for you to join us there. I am recording today on March the 10th, I believe. Monday, March the 10th. I am at home. Nothing major. I took the day off work. I did some cleaning yesterday, and I don't know. I didn't throw out my back, but I did something, and my lower back was hurting last night, and it was still hurting this morning, and mostly when I was just in a sitting position. So I decided to take the day off, grab a heating pad, and stay in bed, and catch up on knitting and reading and podcasts, and finally get this podcast recorded. And it's been a nice day. My back is feeling a little bit better. It's just, you just do something. I've strained something when I was leaning over. I don't know. Nothing major. But it has been a nice respite. Let's see. First of all, I have a couple of thank yous. First of all, I'd like to thank Crazy Knitting Fool for the iTunes review. And I'd like to say I'm really sorry that I always make you hungry. That is one of the hazards of listening to a knitting slash cooking podcast. I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't making you hungry. And I'd also like to thank I would like to thank Renee Loves You also for the iTunes review. I'm not sure if I mentioned that in my last recording, but thank you very much. And I'd especially like to thank Renee for the Vintage Rose stitch markers that she sent me as a surprise this past week. That was just the sweetest surprise. I was floored by the generosity. The stitch markers that she sent me were baking themed, so, after my own heart. And they are just the most adorable things. I don't remember exactly how many there were. 5 or 6 different stitch markers. And if you're not familiar with Vintage Rose, they are metal stitch markers. I don't know if they're silver, but they're silver looking. And are themed, various different themes. And like I said, this one was baking theme. I know that there was a measuring cup and a muffin tin, a set of measuring spoons, a cookbook, and a couple of others that I can't remember right off. And they are just so adorable. I've already used a couple of them on a project that I'm working on right now. And I just love them. And it was just so sweet of Renee. So thank you very much for a completely unexpected and absolutely unnecessary gift. But, thanks very much. I loved it. Let's go on. I'm actually going to do a week in review this week. I hope that the recording is okay. I'm in my bedroom instead of the desk where I normally record. I think it should be fine. I'll try to take a listen and just see. If it's not great, it will be better next time. My week in review, it's actually a little more than a week in review, but there are several things that happened this week that are worth talking about. The first of which was Saturday, about a week ago. I met up with an old friend of mine that I haven't seen since I was 12 years old, so 30 years. And we went to elementary school. He was in my class, he was in my class every year from first grade through sixth grade. And we weren't best friends or anything like that, but we were good friends. And I just hadn't seen him. We've been friends on Facebook for a few years now. And he was coming to Houston to visit some friends, and we met up. And we spent a couple of hours with him and his friends out at a local restaurant, and it was a beautiful spring day here in Houston. It was 81 degrees And it was just a gorgeous day, and we had the best time, and I really, really enjoyed getting to see him. So that was a lot of fun. Speaking of the spring day, the very next day, a cold front came through, and it was very, very cold for Houston. I take the bus, the park and ride most days to work, and downtown Houston can get very cold. The wind chill can be very cold. It's like walking in a wind tunnel with all of the big buildings. And while we've had probably colder temperature as far as the thermometer goes, the wind on Monday morning, it was a Monday or Tuesday morning, was absolutely brutal. Oh my gosh. It was bad. Speaking from a Houstonian's perspective. That said, my supervisor, who lived in Chicago for several years, said it reminded her of Chicago winters, so it was cold. That wasn't supposed to be part of my week in review, but there you go. The other two things, well, there's three other things, but two of the other things actually involve my husband. Because, his good news is always my good news too, and I'm so proud of him. My husband is a high school teacher. He's been teaching for about 18 years at it's the biggest high school in Houston, and arguably the best high school in Houston. Different people will argue with you, but they consistently have the most number of National Merit Scholars and that type of thing that come out of the school. So he teaches those types of students. He teaches AP students and IB students. And this year, he actually was chosen as Teacher of the Year. And that has been a long time coming, and it was very validating for him. He puts so much work into the job that he does, and he connects with his students, and he's quite a beloved teacher by his students. And to finally get the recognition was really awesome. And along the same lines, he's actually been doing something really cool in his classes. He is, for those of you who are familiar with the video game Portal, he has been teaching physics using Portal in his classes. And he created a lab assignment where each of his, or groups of students, created their own levels in Portal to demonstrate different physics concepts. And he actually had a Google Hangout with the guy who has started this program, the Teaching Physics with Portal program, who mentioned that he had actually shown the videos to the people at Valve, who are the makers of the game Portal, and they really liked them. And, that's another sense of validation. It was just really cool. He was really excited about that. It's kind of like if a major knitwear designer recognized the project you were doing or something. It was really cool. So I'm really proud of him. That was just a really good week for my husband. And then the last thing is actually my thing, but it also does impact my husband as well. We had a program at the library, a staff training program on this past Friday, all about makerspaces. And if you're not familiar with the maker movement, it is basically a DIY movement. The keynote at this particular event was Mark Frauenfelder, who was the founder of the blog Boing Boing, and he's the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine. And my husband is actually quite a fan of Mark Frauenfelder. And I actually got to meet him. It wasn't one of these, walk through the line, shake his hand, nice to meet you. A friend of mine, a coworker of mine, was actually chauffeuring him to and from the airport and was having a conversation with him, and I chimed in on something and she introduced me to him. So it was an actual, just spur of the moment conversation with the guy rather than an official meet and greet. And I did not fangirl. It was really cool. I fanboyed a little bit for my husband and told him what a fan my husband was and mentioned the project that he was doing, the one that I just mentioned, the Portal project. And he actually gave me his card to give to Jimmy. And so I proclaimed myself best wife ever. So those of you out there who think you're best wife ever, I have got you beat right now. And I will play that card whenever I need it. Anytime I need it, Mark Frauenfelder. I got it covered now. So that is my weekend review. It was a lot of fun. I went out with some friends this weekend. Also, nothing major. Just hung out. It's been a really nice week. And too bad that it was capped by me hurting my back, but that's okay. I'm getting to record today, so that's a plus. So let's move on to finished objects, which is not really very much. I have two very, very small finished objects and one almost finished object. I did a couple of Hexapuffs. I did one in the Mardi Gras colorway by Hiawassee Creek Dye Works, who I made my Mardi Gras socks from. And also, the other one was from the Mullen Fiber Company in the Prem colorway, which I just finished the Rosa Rubiginosa socks in. So those are my two actual finished objects. They were my actual finished objects. My almost finished object is my monster cowl, which I three needle bound off. So it, as far as the knitting goes, it is complete. However, I do have, 11 repeats time, about 44 ends to weave in. And I'm not looking forward to that. I don't know how I'm going to manage that, because it's one of those things I know that I'm just going to keep putting off. I've talked about the regimens that I have before. I think I'm just going to have to fit it in there somewhere so I can just make myself do it in little bursts. But it is pretty, and it's finished. And I don't know if I will keep it or if I will gift it to somebody, mainly because the colors are not quite my colors. Can't decide yet. We'll see after it's blocked. So let's go on to my works in progress. I have four knitting projects and cross-stitch on the list, but really I've only been focusing on two of them. First on my list is my Noodle, which is by Susan Claudino, which I'm doing in the Three Irish Girls Springville Worsted You Are My Sunshine colorway. I did one arm on that, so if you've been following me and listening regularly, you know that the progress I'm making on this is in fits and starts. I will do one piece here and there, and eventually it will get done. It does need to get done fairly quickly because I believe that the person that I'm making it for is retiring very soon, so I can't keep putting it off. At this point, I just need to do one arm and the tail and seam it together, and it will be done. It would take me all of one night if I would just do it. But I'm just focused on other things right now. The other one that I worked a little bit on was my TGV, which is High Speed Knitting by Susan Ashcroft. I'm doing this in the Undead Yarn Zombified colorway, and I did quite a bit of it during a VKN a couple of weeks, or about a week and a half ago. We did a VKN for those of us going to the Into the Wool retreat in May, just kind of get to know each other a little bit. And I knit and knit on that for about 2 hours while we chatted. And I really felt like I was making a lot of progress. And this is one of those projects where you do 50% of the ball or the skein and garter stitch, and then you do something else. And I really felt like I was making a lot of progress. My ball, when I weighed it first, was 112 grams. And when I weighed it after the knit night, just because I was curious to see how much I'd done, I was a little distressed to find that even with that night plus the other bits of time that I've worked on it, I've only done 8 grams, and I have to do 56 before starting the next section. Oh, kill me now. this is one of those I'll just have to make myself keep working at, and we'll see how it goes. And there's no time limit on this. It's not like I'm going to wear a shawl during the summer anyway, probably. I mean, we do have over-air-conditioned buildings, but I've got my Color Affection at work. I'm probably not going to wear this unless I'm accessorizing in. So, you know, this one will wait a little while. I'll just keep plugging away, and eventually it will get done. It is a mindless project, so it's great for things like a virtual knit night. And I'm sure I'll take it with me when I go to the End of the Wool Cow retreat, because it is such mindless knitting. The next up on my works in progress are my new pair of socks it actually falls into the March Personal Yarn Club, and it also falls into our next knit along for the Into the Wool retreat, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I am doing Collie Wobbles, which I mentioned during the last episode that was the pattern I was considering, and I did decide to go with that, and I'm very happy with my decision. It works very well with the yarn that I'm using. The yarn I am using is Unwind Yarn Company on the Journey Sock Base in the Aurora Borealis colorway. And this color is mostly blues and greens, or blues and purples, I guess. Here, let me grab it real quick, and I can describe it better. So if you look at the socks, overwhelmingly they're blue. But there are little pops of color in here. And so you've got a little bit of green, a little bit of purple, a little bit of kind of a yellowish green, and then some pops of almost white, which I can't tell if it's like a really pale yellow or if it's just little spots that are undyed, but it works nicely. And it works wonderfully with this pattern. And like I mentioned, the pattern is Collie Wobbles. And this is a paid pattern by Fibertown Designs, who is Emily Chain of Fools. She does the Fibertown podcast. And it is a paid pattern. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. And it is a really fun pattern, very easy to memorize, and fairly mindless for most of it. It has an interesting construction in that the gusset is all along the bottom of the foot rather than on the side. And that's interesting. I'll have to see how I like it once I have worn them. Right now, I'm not sure that I'm thrilled with the construction. I may not do that construction again, but it's fun to learn new techniques. So I did have a little bit of wind knitting attacks with this pair of socks over the weekend. I guess this was yesterday. It isn't so much wind knitting attacks, because I knew when I started out that I might be making a mistake, but I wanted to see how it went. The pattern is written very well, but there was a little ambiguity on the gusset part, and I've made heel flap and gusset socks many, many times, and I know typically with the gusset you work a decrease row and then a straight row, decrease row, straight row, until you're down to the appropriate number of stitches. So I figured that was probably what I was supposed to be doing with this as well. However, the way the pattern was written, it didn't actually say that. And so I wasn't sure, you know, since this was a new construction, I wasn't sure. I figured there was a very good chance that I was making it wrong when I went in. And sure enough, I was almost done, and I looked at it, and I just thought, you know, this doesn't look right. So I did something with it I should have done at the very beginning. I went and found one of the pictures on the pattern and actually counted I counted the number of rows in the gusset, which, of course, I should have done before when I had a question. And sure enough, I was doing it wrong. So I had to rip out about 7 rows, which could have been worse. It did take, you know, it took a big chunk out of my knitting time yesterday. But I am back on track. I finished the gusset now and am on the foot of sock 1. So those are going well. The other project that I started since we last podcast is Bonnie Wee Mouse by Susan Claudino. And I am using, this is also a paid pattern, I'm using Bonnie Wee Things by Unwind Yarn Company on the Touring BK base. And this This project slash yarn was a collaboration between Dana of Unwind Yarn Company and Susan Claudino. Dana dyed the yarn specifically for this project. And so when she put it on sale, I had to buy it. And this yarn, I also have sitting right next to me, is really pretty. It is, the base of the yarn is, it's kind of a taupe color, I guess, with a lot of flecks of purple and then a few flecks of hot pink. And it is so pretty. And working with the yarn itself, so both of the new projects I'm using are Unwind Yarn Company, and working with both of them, they are fabulous yarns. First of all, the colors are amazing, and working with them is wonderful. I don't know what base Dana uses, but this feels like working with Madeline Tosh. It is wonderful yarn. I highly recommend it. So for the Bonnie Wee Mouse, how far am I? I have done both legs and both arms, and I've done the tail, and I started the first ear a little while ago. And this is a really quick little project, and it's going to be adorable. This one I doubt I'll give away. I did think about giving it away to somebody, and I've already lost that. I don't remember who I was thinking about. But this one I think most likely will sit on my desk, because I have a lot of softies on my desk, and this one would fit very nicely, especially with the cat. So if you have the cat and mouse, it'd be kind of cute. Anyway, I love the project. It's very easy, very well written. And then the only other thing I'm working on, again, I'm still working on the Once Upon a Time sampler. I had put it aside for quite a while. I am still on only the January square of this, so I am about 2 months behind, or a month and a half behind. I think I talked about this last time, I have it in a large frame, and it's not particularly ergonomic. I really do need to switch it into something else, but I'm lazy. No denying it, I'm just lazy. So what I am doing right now, just to get myself back in the groove, and I'm trying to make myself do at least 15 minutes on it a day. That way I know that I'll be plugging along regularly, and maybe eventually I'll catch up. If not, I'll finish it next year, in 2015. And no big deal. Upcoming projects. I don't have anything imminent. The next thing I'll likely cast on is a cowl for my daughter, Laura, out of another Crafty Girl sock yarn in the Frozen colorway. I've mentioned this in a few different episodes now, and I still haven't cast that on. I have queued a bunch of patterns that could fit into this, or that could fit in with the Into the Wool Spotlight knit along that, again, I will talk about in just a second. I just need to let Laura take a look at the ones I've queued and see if she likes any of them. If not, we had another one that I had thought about making. It was an infinity cowl of some type, and she could always choose from that. I just won't get any points for it. So that brings me, since I keep saying I'll talk about it, I'll talk about it before I forget. The Into the Wool retreat is in Crossville, Tennessee. And it's the weekend after Mother's Day, and I'm going with my mom, and there are several people that I am friends with on Instagram who are going, and I'm really looking forward to getting to meet them. We had one knit along earlier in the winter, which was a woodsy cowl, which I mentioned I did the naturalist cowl that my mom designed for that. And then we are now on the next knit along, which is a spotlight knit along, which is basically we have a list of vendors and sponsors for the retreat, and for each pattern or yarn or stitch marker or bag or whatever we use from one of the vendors or sponsors, we get a point for our team. And we don't know what team we'll be on. We'll be assigned when we get there. And turns out I have a lot of point potential. When I first started looking through the list, I didn't think I had a lot. But I have several skeins of yarn, and I had only one bag, but since then, Bird Leg Bags has become a sponsor, and I've got three of her bags. And my mom, who is a free spirit and owns Absolute Wonder on Etsy, also became a sponsor. And naturally, I have several of her bags. So I am set when it comes to bags. And then with the stitch markers that Renee sent me this week, I've already had one Vintage Rose stitch marker, but now I have about six more. And then, of course, the pattern possibilities are endless, especially when you think I only have March and April to do these. I'm set. I think that my team will be happy. I think that I will have plenty of points for my team if I can just make myself knit faster. So that's what that's all about, if you hear me mention it. Let's see, what else? I'm going to mention again that we do have a knit-along going in the Ravelry group. It's the Christmas All Year Long Cal. I have all of the specifics in the first post on the thread. You can knit anything winter holiday related, whether it's ornaments or gifts or just decorations, and you can enter them for prizes. The only real rule is that you have to be a member of the group, and it has to be a winter holiday. And you can argue any holiday, any winter holiday you want. That will be perfectly fine. The first drawing will be the first episode I record after March 31st, and anything that has been entered between January and March, off those 3 months, is eligible for winning that first drawing, which will be a $10 Ravelry pattern, $10 or less, Ravelry pattern of your choice. And, oh gosh, I was just getting ready to say something about that. I had a question in the thread. Yes, you can enter as many projects as you want. It's not just one per month. My goal for myself was, the whole point of it was to get myself to knit one Christmas ornament per month. So that's where the one per month came from. You can enter as many as you want. And we've got a few entries. I don't remember exactly how many right now. Maybe four or five. So your chances are pretty good. I'd love to see more people participate. And the prize at the end of the year will be something from Absolute Wonder. And I will still have to work with my mom to figure out exactly what that will be. I keep saying that. I probably won't actually come up with specifics on that until we'll probably talk about it when we go to the Into the Wool retreat, because we're driving from Mississippi to Tennessee together. And that will be a good time for us to discuss it. A lot of people, I'm sure, would think this is really strange, but my mom and I talk mostly over Ravelry and email. Neither one of us are super big fans of talking on the phone. So we don't, unless I remember to email her about it, I probably haven't talked about it. I know that there are people who talk to their moms multiple times a day, or, you know, every day, every week, and we're just weird. And we've talked about it a lot, about how we're okay with it. So, you know, there are definitely times when I wish that I would just pick up the phone, but that's just who I am, and that's just who she is. But, anyway, off on that tangent, let's see, what else? Okay, so that was everything for knitting. I'm going to go into in the kitchen now, and I have a handful of things to talk about. Honestly, for those of you who were worried about getting hungry, I don't think this is going to be one of those massive food overload recipes, but if you're feeling susceptible to hunger right now, maybe now's a good time to move on. I have four different things on my list to talk about. The first, I talked last time about the chocolate chip muffins that I made. I decided to try the same recipe with blueberries this past week. I did that last Sunday, I believe. And I actually liked the chocolate chip ones better. I don't know if I maybe baked these a little bit longer, or maybe it's because I didn't eat them right out of the oven. They just were a little dry. I would still make them again for sure, the recipe is fantastic. But if you want to hear a better review, go listen to last week's and listen to the chocolate chip muffin review. And I'm a bigger fan of chocolate than I am of blueberries, so that could have a lot to do with it too. The next thing on my list is quesadillas. Actually, this is just a really sort of aside. A few episodes ago, I talked about the slow cooker chicken tacos that I made, and I shared the recipe on the group. And Christy, who is Chris Loves Wool, tried the recipe not too long ago and said that it was really great. And she had actually used the leftovers to make quesadillas. And I thought that was a fantastic idea. I made the chicken tacos last week, and we had leftovers. So on Saturday for lunch, I made quesadillas using the leftover chicken, and they were fantastic. I actually really, honestly, I liked the quesadillas better than I liked the tacos originally. So I will definitely do this again. In fact, I actually made one for myself for lunch today. The ones I made on Saturday, I used flour tortillas just from the grocery store. Here in Houston and in Texas in general, the ones in Houston, our grocery store, H-E-B, which is a Texas-specific grocery store, they often, most of the stores have fresh tortillas that they make in the store. I didn't use those for this one. I used just a brand called Tia Rosa that are okay. I generally prefer the ones that are fresh from H-E-B. I mean, why not? If you can get fresh tortillas, that's so much better. But I end up going to Fiesta, which is another local grocery store, more often because it's closer. And that's what I did this time. They turned out fine. Christy's tip was to spread a little mayonnaise on the, tortillas before grilling them. And I didn't do that this time. I do think that's a great idea. I've done it on grilled cheese before and it does do something. I don't even remember. I guess it makes them a little crispier. But since we only had a handful of tortillas, I was afraid they wouldn't be good and that I would not have any backup. So for this time, I didn't do it. Actually, all I did was spray a little olive oil on there instead of butter. So these were actually not that bad, except, of course, you know, the cheese. And I used probably about a quarter cup of cheese in each one. It was really good. They were delicious. Today, I actually used corn tortillas because that's what I had on hand. And I don't know that I would say they were as good, but it was still pretty good, just different. Obviously, corn tortillas and flour tortillas have a different taste. But it was a super, super suggestion on how to use that leftover chicken. So I highly recommend it. If you ever make that recipe and you need something to do with the leftovers, that would be great. Another good thing that it would be good for, which I haven't tried, but I will try soon, is enchiladas. It would make a really good filling for enchiladas. So along the same lines, I want to talk about the salsa I used. Both times I've made this now, I used a local brand of salsa. It's actually made here in Houston, and the brand is Salsa Texas. And I don't know if you can get it. I don't know where else you could get it. I'm sure they have a website. And if they do, I'll try to remember to post it. But you could check and see if there's a way to order it. Because this is by far my favorite salsa ever. If you've listened long, I know I've talked about it on one episode, and I don't know if I've talked about it on others, but I am very much not a fan of onions. I really have a strong aversion to onions. And I won't say that I have overcome it, but there are some things that I can sort of ignore them. And mainly I think it's because the foods are so complex that it hides the crunchiness of an onion, or they're so soft that I don't notice. One of those is often salsa, especially a fresh salsa. I can either avoid the onions, or it blends in so well with the tomatoes and the chips and all of that that it doesn't bother me. But when I'm looking at a jar of salsa in the grocery store, I am always looking at the ingredients, and I like ones where the onions are low on the ingredient list, and I will deal with it. Salsa Texas actually does not have any onion listed in the ingredients list. So naturally, when I saw that, I grabbed it. And the first time I grabbed both the red salsa and the green salsa, and they're both very, very good. But the green salsa is amazing. So the first time I made the chicken tacos, I used the red salsa just because it seemed like what you should do. Second time I used the green salsa, and honestly, I'm not sure I could tell that much of a difference. If I had them side by side and did a taste test, maybe I would be able to, but I think the ingredients cook down so much over the 10 hours or so that it's in the crock pot that you can't really tell. But on chips by itself, I really prefer the green salsa. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with salsas or the different types of salsas, the main difference between a red salsa and a green salsa is a red uses tomatoes, where the green salsa uses tomatillos. And they are slightly different. And the green salsa has quite a bit tangier. They're just very different. But for the past couple of times when I did the quesadillas, I used the green salsa to dip it in, and it was just so good. I bet it would be really good with the salsa actually in the quesadilla too, but I haven't tried that. Anyway, so there is my rave review of the Salsa Texas salsa. If you can find it, I highly recommend it. And, excuse me. If you ever want to try it, you can let me know, and maybe we can work out a trade for yarn for salsa or something like that. I'd be more than happy to send it. The other thing that I was going to talk about, is expanding my horizons. And that actually, hold on just a moment. I'm sitting on a heating pad and it got just a little bit hot. So I'm turning that off. Much better now. Okay, so expanding my horizons. I bake a lot, but generally I stick to cakes. That has been my thing. Cakes or cookies, and specifically bars, because the idea of, I just really hate dropping out cookies. It really annoys me. It's tedious, and I have a really hard time doing it. So often I'll make bar cookies or brownies or something like that instead. But I've decided to expand my horizons a little bit. I think during the last episode, I talked about making bread, which I had never done before. I have not made another loaf of bread since then, but it is absolutely something I want to do. I did mention that I bought, in the last episode, I reviewed the Cook's Illustrated baking book, and I tried to get the ingredients to make a cranberry orange bread yesterday, but the little grocery store that I go to usually actually had no cranberries. I wasn't surprised to not find fresh cranberries, but I couldn't even find any frozen ones. So I'll have to go to the grocery store to a different grocery store and buy those to try this recipe out. But what I really want to talk about is pies. I don't know if I've ever made a pie crust from scratch for just a normal pie. There was a recipe that I tried several years ago from Melissa D'Arabian, who won the Next Food Network star several years ago and is one of the Food Network, big time stars now. But she had a show called $10 Dinners, I think. And the very first episode of that, I believe, she made a potato bacon tart. And I used her recipe to make, I just completely used that, and I made the pastry from scratch for that. And it was delicious, and I was really surprised at how easy it was. But I also discovered that often a good frozen pie crust or a Pillsbury pie crust tastes almost as good, so it's not usually worth the effort. But I've decided that I really, that's one of the things that I haven't been very good at. I'm limited. I want to expand my horizons, increase my skills. And that includes learning to make pastry. So we were invited this coming Friday to a Pie Day party. And for those of you who don't know, don't get the reference, Pie Day is March 14th, which is a play on 3:14 or 3.14, which is pi, the number pi. So we are going to a Pie Day party on Friday, and we have the option to either be a contestant or to bring a prize, each person. So we will bring a prize for Jimmy, who does not bake, but naturally I am going to bake for this for this occasion. What better opportunity is there? So I decided I didn't want to bake something new because, you know, it's a competition. I don't want to go in with something blind. So I decided that I was going to make the salted caramel chocolate pecan pie that I made at, I believe I made it at Thanksgiving. And it turned out so wonderfully. It was absolutely the best pie I had ever made. But the original recipe calls for a pre-baked refrigerated pie crust. And for this competition, I actually have to make the crust from scratch. So I grabbed my new cookbook, the Cook's Illustrated Baking Book, and found their recipe for pie crust. And they actually have three. They have one that is just a generic pie crust. I can't remember what it's called. That's butter and shortening. And I don't actually know what all, because that's not the one I use. And they also have one that's an all-butter pie crust. And then they have the foolproof pie crust that uses vodka in it as well. And I decided to go with that one because it said foolproof. Well, I don't know that foolproof is exactly the right phrase. It tasted great, but rolling it out was a mess. It does say in the recipe that it is a moisture pie crust, but when I started rolling it, even though I had refrigerated it for quite a while, it was really sticky and it didn't roll out evenly. It's okay. It's fine. This is, you know, I didn't actually mention before making this pie for the weekend, I needed to practice. And because I had read reviews on Southern Living's website, which is the source of the pie, there were several reviews that were negative for this pie. A lot of them said that it was runny, and then a lot of them commented on the caramel sauce, which was bitter. And I had actually noticed that too. And because I was afraid that it was a fluke, that the one that I had made at Thanksgiving had turned out so well, I decided I needed to practice. So I made it again yesterday, and I made, like I mentioned or alluded to, I did make the crust completely by myself, or completely from scratch. It did, like I said, it was messy, but it turned out very good. It tasted really good. So hopefully, when I made it, I accidentally made the recipe for a double pie crust instead of a single. So for the party on Friday, I actually already have the crust made, or the dough made. So hopefully, when I roll that one out, I froze it, and maybe when I thaw it, it won't actually be quite so sticky. We'll see. I'm hoping that I can make it look a little prettier than the one I made. The one I made for us today, yesterday. however, okay, let's see. So, crust, fine. The filling was great. It's a rather thick crust. It's very fudgy, almost like a brownie filling. A little bit thinner than that. And it's, like I said, it's a chocolate pecan pie, so the filling does have pieces of pecan in it. And then you arrange pecans on the top after it's baked and drizzle it with salted caramel, or with a caramel sauce, and then top it with a little bit of sea salt. This may seem like a refresher for some of you, because I'm sure I talked about this in November. I decided to mess with the caramel sauce just a little bit because I was afraid of it turning out bitter like it had before. The recipe from Southern Living includes a tablespoon of lemon juice, and a lot of people in their reviews thought that maybe the lemon juice was the culprit of it being bitter. It also has the instructions say to cook it until it is a dark amber color, and my thought was that maybe I had cooked it a little too long and that it might have actually been a little burned, and that might have been the bitterness. I wasn't sure which was which. So instead, this time I left out the lemon juice and I watched it very carefully and took it off when it was not as dark as it had been when I made it previously. And this time it was great. It was sweet. There was not any bitterness, although I could taste a little bit of the bitterness, just like the barest hint, which makes me think that the bitterness probably came from cooking it too long before, and that I was on target by not cooking it quite as long. I drizzled it, let it, and this also because of the concerns of it being runny, I let it sit overnight, and that's what I had done at Thanksgiving too, when I didn't have a problem with it. So that's what I did. And we actually had pie for breakfast this morning. My intention was to take the pie to work and get taste tests. Since I didn't go to work, it's still sitting in my kitchen. Whether or not I'll have another piece is yet to be seen. I kind of do want to take it to work. Actually, I'm sure I'll take at least some of it to work and get some opinions. But this one turned out better than the one I made at Christmas, or Thanksgiving, I mean. And hopefully the one that I make for Friday will turn out even better. I'm hoping that the crust will roll out a little better and it will at least be prettier. Speaking of making it pretty, I had in my possession a Sur La Table gift card that I had gotten for my birthday 2 years ago that I had never used. It's been in my wallet, and there is a Sur La Table not very far from me, but I just haven't ever gone. I don't know why. So what I decided to do was to spend it online. And I ended up buying some pie weights and a dough scraper, which should be coming in the mail tomorrow. And my intention is to continue working on my pies and to perfect them and be a more well-rounded baker. So, it is 48 minutes in. I keep thinking that I'm going to have a shorter episode, but I just keep talking. I hope that you have enjoyed listening to me ramble yet again. I appreciate all of my listeners. I'm really happy that you all choose to come back. I didn't mention you can find me on the internet as Summer Yarns, both on Ravelry and on Instagram. And I would love it if you follow me. I do. If I see that you are knitting related at all, at least as long as you're not clearly a company, and if you're listening to my podcast, you're not. There are a couple of people that have followed me that it was purely promotional and I didn't follow. But if you're at all just knitting, you're just a knitting person, crochet person, yarn person, I'll follow you back. I know that there are some people who are choosier, and I'm not one of them. If you follow me, I'll follow you back. And I really enjoy getting to know a lot of people through Instagram that way. I guess that is it for today. I will record again soon. I have been recording more on a week and a half to 2 week basis. I keep saying this. If it's been more than a week and a half since I recorded, I miss it, and I feel like I need to record. So one of these days, I will try to establish a better schedule, but it hasn't happened yet. Thanks for listening. I hope you all have a good week, and I will talk to you soon.